Gentlemen, please don't desert me. To the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, and proudly brought to you in conjunction with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Now, well, it's very, very nice, lovely day, and it's at these times that I'd like to give a wee bit of praise to those who deserve it. Been having joygasms over all the people that are helping out with the show, posting up Guerrilla Media articles on their Facebook and posting up the Vinnie Eastwood Show banner on their websites, things like that. Some former guests of the show, all very, very supportive. And there's no possibility the show would be here without the people that are supporting us, I can guarantee you. And it just shows that, you know, no man is an island. No show is an island, for that matter. You know, and no machine can work without all the moving parts being in good working order, much like a mechanical beast trying to charge and bite chunks out of the evil new world order slime bags that we have controlling pretty much every single one of our countries through ridiculous amounts of debt. Just
well, Vinnie, I disagree there, because the New World Order's machine seems to function perfectly fine without all the cogs being in good order.
Well, maybe their machine is predestined to make sure that it can only function if all the cogs are in disarray. And that's maybe how it works perfectly. It's perfectly chaotic. Maybe our show isn't terribly different. You know,
like a broke gearbox. Yeah. Interesting. I mean, you know, not to harp on about this little battle that's going on here in New Zealand over the future of the radio channel that's currently pushing us out across the airwaves, well, the main radio channel, our flagship show, Rush FM. But there were a few comments I noticed, Vinny, you were definitely over the target last night, and I saw people just saying the usual. I don't care. I don't care. I care about KFC. I care about movies. I care about alcohol. I care about all these things, my sport on TV. But regarding the whole, you know, financial system that runs it, you know, that supposedly backs that all up, I just don't care.
Mm-hmm. You really can't abide things like that, can you? You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Hey, and maybe that's the allure of the show, because unlike those people who don't mean anything, don't do anything, and don't really care, we're really good cats, and we love having people listen to us be good cats. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. We'll be right back.
Don't sit around.
Joey. Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, Rush 89 FM in Hamilton, GorillaMedia.co.nz and whatnot. And there's a whole bunch of affiliated truther sort of people all over the show. And I always like to give plug play to those people who you generally probably won't know who they are, never heard from them before. Unless, of course, you're involved in the activist circles upon which they are participated. One such person is Jade Tuckwell, and he joins us on the line now from Wellington 911 Truth. He's their web guy. Jade, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show.
Yeah, hi. How's it going?
Well, you know, borderlining on fabulous is my party line, mate. Just give us a little bit of background about yourself. How did you wake up? How did you get into activism?
I think it was around in 2005, 2006 that I found out about, I think Loose Change was the first film that I watched, and I've just forgetting 911 anyway, I've been doing just doing the street action for just over 1.5 years now. Yeah, so that's kind of my history. Yeah.
Of, she was another young guy, one of the millions who watched Loose Change like myself and sort of got angry and started investigating, and so it goes, right?
Yeah. I was initially I was just burning them myself and giving them to friends and family, but then I actually traced down people that were of like mind, and it's been really great working with the team in Wellington, which is
because they're easy to get along with than friends and family normally, huh? In this regard.
Yeah, I guess I think it's just that moral will to do something to make the society a better world, which is great.
But I mean, how did your friends and family respond in comparison to just complete strangers and like minds you find out there?
Right. Friends and family. Well, I don't think I've got one of those personalities that's great to convince other people. Some people can really easily, you know, they're good at selling their ideas. I'm not so good at that kind of thing, but I've given a lot of DVDs to people, and I generally just leave it up to them if they want to pursue it. I recently gave it to an old friend, with a couple of DVDs to one of my old friends at school, and I think he didn't watch it at all, and that seems to be the way it is sometimes. But
that's the thing, though. You do your part, and then it's just up to them, and whether they respond or not, it's up to them, isn't it?
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, I mean, if people aren't aware of a choice, how can they know which one to make?
Yeah, we don't lead a horse to water, as I often say. But,
and there's so many good people in the street that they're kind of naive, and like, you know, I've handed out DVDs to people, and they're kind of like, why are you giving this to me for free? No, well, like, what's the catch? Where's the camera? Or, you know, everyone's
is
so,
it a,
sort of,
is it a religious DVD?
yeah.
What's your group? Yeah, what's your group? Or groupism is often the mentality, I think. Yes.
Yeah. You have to be affiliated with something. It's a funny thing, you know. People say, "Oh, we need to set up a We Are Change style group in New Zealand." And there's a lot of people circulating this right now between Christchurch and Wellington and Auckland. And it's kind of like, for me, I'm just like one of these people who's, you know, steer away from groups. They always get infiltrated and then, you know, stuff happens. But if you don't have a group, then you're less likely to be effective, because that's the way in which these sheep think. And then I think to myself, should we cater for the sheep and their sort of thinking, or should we go into a true, nuanced form of, waking up to madness?
Well, I'd never want to belong to any group that would have me as a member.
Yeah, I think, groupism is a very, it's not a good thing.
But it can be effective, though, nonetheless. You know what I mean? Like, it can be far more effective in meeting our means in pursuing our goals. You know, if we want to make a dent here in the whole collective consciousness in New Zealand, the best way would be to get 1,000 of us join a massive group and get the funds together and we start putting things on TV. But on the other hand, it would have all the politics that goes with forming a group.
Yeah, working together is, I think, what forming a group is about. And the most important thing about having any group is the leadership, really. Those people that are leading it, whether it's one person or a core group of people. But one of the things I think, whenever I give a DVD out on the street, I always look for two qualities in the people. In a person, and the first one is that they need to be intellectually, interested in the topic and be able to understand it. And the second thing is that once they know the truth, that they will actually do something helpful. Because if people know the truth and their helplessness, they suffer from helplessness, or they're never going to do anything, or they feel it's better to join the dark side or whatever. It's really pointless to give the DVD to those people as well.
Well, that's a funny thing, early in 2000, well, in late 2005, early in my activism with 9/11, come across a couple of guys, and one guy in particular, very well researched, a huge amount of information. I, in fact, borrowed a hard drive at the time, was just like about a terabyte's worth of information, was just unknown to me. And he decided that joining the dark side would be a good idea. So that's his path now. And it kind of blew my mind, because to this point, I haven't come across someone who, as an individual, knew as much as he did, to be honest. And it's funny, isn't it? You get that scenario when you have that scenario.
Yes, one of my friends is, old friends, I should say, has kind of joined on the dark side as well, and it's disappointed, but you just have to move on, I guess. And that's just about people that, good people that want to help society, I guess, and meeting up and networking with those people.
Yeah, and I think the wanting to help society is the most important point, because, well, there's plenty of good people out there, but not every one of them wants to help society. So there's no point trying to get all these good people together, because, hey, not every one of them are on the same wavelength of actually getting things done, having an end goal in sight. I mean, do we have an end goal for the government here? I mean, all we want really is a new investigation of 9/11, held back investigation of 9/11.
Well, we want more than that.
Oh, yeah, more than that.
That's a starting point. I mean, it has to go further than that. I mean,
Well, that's just the tip of the... 9/11 is just the tip of the spear, because once you get that open, the implications are absolutely enormous, let alone all the different players involved, the intelligence agencies running the world would all be implicated, and things of this nature. So imagine if there was, like, say, a 9/11 or Nuremberg trial-esque type thing, right? And all these grand war criminals, all these elite bankers and everything like that, their heads are on the block. What then?
I tell you what would happen. They would contain an investigation. So even if it was an independent investigation, somehow, somewhere, they would find a way to contain it so that only maybe Condi and Bush and Cheney went down. Only they were executed or whatever. I mean, it would not go to David Rockefeller level. It wouldn't even get to it wouldn't even get to Henry Kissinger level, or Richard, or Wolfowitz, or Pearl. I mean, it probably wouldn't even involve them. They would have it like a very narrowed. Yeah, it's a sad thing. I've wondered about that. I've wondered would 9/11 investigation expose the New World Order as a whole? No, then they'll just find another. Pull another false flag in terms of the investigation and stifle it from going too far. And what do you think, Jade?
I think a new investigation, I guess it would. It would just open up, make it more public, and public knowledge, because exposing who is doing it and also the tactic that is used, and there's been commonly used for a long time, exposing those people and those tactics is really key, and an investigation would help to do that, I believe.
Exactly.
And even just pushing the fact that we're pushing for an investigation is opening the door more.
Well, I think that what it would do, the bigger effect, I think, than the actual court proceedings would be, for years now, everyone knows the crazy conspiracists have been saying this. Then it turns out we're right, as we know we're right anyway. But you know, once it's confirmed in the public consciousness, we're right, then all the popular mechanics freaks and all the so-called scholars at the universities and all the shills and scum out there would be shown for what they are. You know, and people like us wouldn't let them run away from it. I would drag up a list of every person in this country, from Michael Laws to Kim Hill to people in the States, James Meigs at Popular Mechanics to Bill Mayer, all Bill O'Reilly, all these freaks, and we would publicly shame and shame and shame them and say the blood's on their hands for the war that proceeded from 9/11. I mean, that would be the biggest effect, I'd say. It would make people go, okay, we were right, you were wrong, now who's going to pay for it, and how do we move forward from here?
Yeah.
I would think that any new investigation, you know, like you said, well, would definitely get stifled, which means that the whole methodology of investigating and who would do the investigating would have to change as well. Like, let's say, for example, the judge hearing it was like, say, Jason Burmes.
Well, I mean, yeah. This is a framework within which they operate, though, Vinny. I mean, it's what they would say, oh, you can't pass that for evidence that was, you know, beyond a certain, you know, that's beyond 10 years now. You can't call upon that eyewitness. They would have every sort of, you know, operating within their little contrived framework would be the most difficult factor, I'd say.
Yeah, see, and this is the annoying thing. It's why it sometimes gets young men like us extremely angry, and I don't know. I guess as a guy, you kind of have this sort of violent tendency sort of thing, and the urge comes to just smack them upside of the head and go, "Oi, shush! That is all nonsense. We are going to debate the facts. We are going to have a look at the evidence, and then we are going to hang some bloody people who murdered our citizens." Okay? Well, period. I don't care about any of
this. Yeah. I mean, Jade, have you called into Talkback on New Zealand radio here about 9/11?
No, I haven't. I've never really had much a lot of confidence in the mainstream media. I don't know if Talkback is what you would consider mainstream, because
I consider it mainstream.
I haven't really done much with mainstream. I think TVNZ is probably a good target because they're New Zealand owned. You know, they're a national
government owned.
I feel that we have some leverage in that, and it's interesting with the.
The CIA do too.
With the Richard Gage interview with on Close Up, that was, you know, obviously was through TVNZ as well. I think TVNZ does cover more topics than the company ones.
Well, Close Up's producer, Ian Sinclair, got in touch with me and a few others too. And he's been in touch a few times now. And they did a great interview with Richard Gage. For people who haven't heard, it's about 7 minutes with Mike Hosking of TVNZ on Close Up interviews Richard Gage. Richard said it was his best mainstream media experience. And so I was really glad about that. I've since called him up and said, you know, we want to expose this global warming scam and everything else. And he's been a bit more reserved and sort of claimed he was investigating conspiracy theories. And then he'd never even heard of, he'd never heard of David Icke or Alex Jones or anyone. So I was kind of like, okay, you haven't investigated anything. I don't know what to make of these guys. But on New Zealand radio, I've come across some total arrogance without any knowledge, people in the shape of Kim Hill and Michael Laws. Unbelievable, man. Like, I just want to get on there and, I mean, we should call them up more often. I encourage any listeners in New Zealand to call those freaks up because they're just devoid of anything, and you'll notice they'll slander you straight away. I mean, I'm calling them names, yeah, sure, but I want to have an open debate when I'm on air with them, and they'll just say, hey, this sounds like one of those moon landing theories.
Yeah.
I mean, you hear a lot of that, Jade?
I've kind of kept clear of that with receiving any kind of demonizing, is what I'd call it, with all these webs that they've programmed into society, like conspiracy and cult and all these kind of different words that they've programmed to demonize people. I guess it's probably because I don't approach those kind of venomous people, as I would, call them, those people that are programmed with venom, to objectivate, and demonize certain groups of people, and so I guess I've just kept clear of those people, and really just been I've tried mainly just to network with good people, and that I believe would listen to me and would maybe have a 95% chance that I would that they would actually listen and understand the situation, and whether or not they'll do something, but just to spread that knowledge.
I believe in, like, you join forces with good people who can listen to each other and easily debate ideas openly without all these walls. Like, that couldn't be possible. The government would never do that. I mean, I thought we'd broken through these walls like hundreds of years ago. I thought people realized they had power corrupts. And, oh no, it's different now. We're not living in medieval times, Will. You have to understand, we have the process of law now. This doesn't happen. Corruption doesn't happen. And it gets really old and really, really fast and tends to rub people like me up the wrong way, I tell you. We'll carry this on the other side of the break, Jade. Vinny's just off, I think. He's off.
I'm right here, bro.
he's gallivanting out in the woods somewhere, but
we'll be right back, folks. Right.
Is global, my tower secure, my cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, I'll let them all die in exasperation, have them all healed from the lacerations.
Live and alive, apparently. That rhymes with the same friggin' word. Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in partnership with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz. The world's happiest countries. Most of the nations atop the list are democratic, business-friendly, and boast strong social safety nets. Apparently, the list is top five. Norway, Denmark, Finland, Australia, and New Zealand makes it in there at number five with very high levels of social cohesion and a first-place ranking in education. New Zealanders trust and help each other. The country ranks first in civil liberties. 94% found the beauty of their physical environment satisfying. Isn't it hilarious? And look at what they say about Australia.
It's relativism, though.
But look at what they say about Australia. Citizens of Australia trust their government.
Well, that's seen as a secure thing. You know, when you're projecting, going into business models, you always want a stable currency, right? And the best way to have stability is to have trust in government. And that's why they hate us so much. That's why these groups demonize us. That's why the ADL goes out and says, these people are, breaking down trust in government. They're destabilizing the country at its very core. They're undermining it. When in fact, the people sitting in the positions of power are undermining the U.S. Constitution. They're undermining the cornerstones of this country, even though some of them are democratic nonsense. But I mean, like, it's so patronizing, Avani. Then you try and construct arguments and show people real demonstrable ways in which our liberties are being eroded. Like, we have a search and surveillance bill here being on the table right now. When Parliament comes back on the 8th of February, they're going to be voting as to whether they can put cameras in the homes of New Zealanders without us knowing. And if I remove the camera from my house when they put it in to surveil me, as they will, then they can take me to court for destruction of their property. Little freaks. They can come in your house and surveil you. And we have the best civil liberty adherence on the planet. Are you kidding me? And then these, and then so then these layperson freaks who just read like the Women's Weekly and, you know, top 10 91.8 FM hits or something, they're just going to reply, "Oh, look, didn't you see that article? Don't you read the paper? We're the best in the world. We have the most social cohesion and the most beautiful government on the planet." Well, what do you think of these perceptions, reality people, Jade?
Yeah, it's all programmed, and mainstream media is just a big industry, really. But it is losing its ground. It is losing its people are losing confidence in it. I would say intellectual people, think people that think more deeply about these things are losing confidence in it. But yeah, your average Joe or average person who doesn't care, who feels that they're living the good life and they don't need to know about anything else, they're willfully programmed by this.
Just keep bending over, don't they?
I have a good example to add here for our Rush FM listeners. There's this group started up on Facebook called Bring Back Backbeat FM and that kind of thing, and talk about all the things that I do on this group, and one of them said, I'm not really caring, and end off, quit having you cry, I'll be gone now. And I said, sorry, did I hurt your feelings? Didn't mean to offend you. The reason why our society is so messed up, full of corruption, lies and evil, is because people like you who don't care. You are the worst kind of apathetic scum that has ever existed, and your kind will drive this country to ruin with your mindlessness. Try caring once in a while. Maybe lay off the Coca-Cola and artificially sweetened stuff and stop watching TV, and you may turn into a different person that is worth the air you suck down. Until then, you are a cancer of this world. That was the end of the conversation. She didn't bother replying after that.
That would probably end most conversations, Vinny, I'd say. Fair judgment there. But,
Jeepers creepers, I'm sorry.
You know, and for the people out there who think that's too harsh, little babies, 50 million dead babies since 1973, that's harsh. Killing a million Iraqis plus, that was from Reuters, January 2008, a million Iraqis dead to date. That's harsh. Hard talk isn't too far. It isn't going too far. People say this is not peaceful protest when you use words like scum. It is peaceful. Anything non-violent is peaceful.
By very definition.
And so this is peaceful. Peace is saying that John Campbell and Michael Laws and the heads of New Zealand media and the heads of British media and the heads of American media are scum. Like, by definition, sellout freaks who would rather have a new Jaguar and Aston Martin than a free country. I mean, that's what it comes down to. If you got, you know, a third of the population listening to you every night, and you have the potential to shift opinions and to take power away from elected officials by way of shifting opinions in society, and you don't use your position for that good, I don't care who they've got behind them with a gun to their head. You either step out the job or you do your job, or you get abused by people like me. I mean, there's going to be more of us soon. You won't be able to shut us all up.
Well, yeah, and I think that's the whole point of the show, really, is to propagate that a little more, because we don't have I don't know. What about you, Jade? Have you ever heard of any other truther shows on the air or on TV or something like that, like Real Truthers? Because I haven't seen any. Not in this country.
No.
I didn't even like the term truther, but, like, is it anyone real telling anything real about...
No, not in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Well, it just shows why it's just so necessary that we do this show, isn't it? You know, it kind of spurs me on because nobody else is doing it. Yeah. And that was the reason I went out with the camera a couple of years ago and started filming all the activists and making all those videos, because nobody else was doing it. And that's a pure reason, you know.
At the very least, I just want debate. I mean, what do you think, Jade? I mean, shouldn't we have public debate? Shouldn't it be public knowledge to know the difference between capitalism and communism, for instance? I mean, what do you think? I've seen some of your comments online. I'm across the net all the time, buddy. So I've seen some of the stuff you've written about Marx and about the Zeitgeist movement. But just as much as we might disagree with them, just the discussion of ideas, I think, is a good thing. I mean, why do you think that's so lost today in society?
Basically, it comes down to capitalism. Capitalism is a few different definitions, you know, by different standards. But in the end, I would describe it as a system where people are working for money, and those that have the capital, money is capital, as well as physical assets are capital. Those when people just accumulate physical assets endlessly, money and physical property, then what happens is that some people get a lot of capital and keep acquiring more and more, and becomes a disparity between those that have more capital and those that don't have capital. In New Zealand, it's great that we have a minimum of standard. You know, we can go on the dole or whatever, but I mean, it's never the solution. And
well, for me, just to weigh in on what you said so far, for me, there is nothing wrong with money per se, because it's just a representation of goods traded on an open market, supposedly. And for me, there's nothing wrong either with one man getting a leg up on another, so to speak. You know, there's the problem I see it is people cheating. Is actual con artistry cheating embedded at the very roots of society, issuing fiat currencies. Now, that's a problem. It's where the bankers are able to integrate into society. So like in a game of blackjack, you know, the banker isn't a player. In this society, the guys issuing the currency that we're indebted to people should be rewarded for their labor, but then, if people are, if a bunch of people from China are willing to come here and work for $6.95, obviously, you know, if someone's poor because they're starting off a business and the government's bloody got all this tax leveraged against them, then they're going to go for the cheapest labor, and it's just a dastardly circle. For me, the parasite in the picture is the government, because they're just a real estate agent, slimeball, middleman in every form of transaction that goes on. Whereas I say we don't need them. We're smart enough, if we just weren't so lazy, to run our own lives.
Yeah, I don't think the politicians are... I think New Zealand government is pretty good to some extent, but it's my personal opinion that... the hierarchy is that the CEOs and multinationals that are in New Zealand those people that are investing in those multinationals, they are really the ones in control of the economy. They operate with politicians to get power and to change legislation, you know, to help the economies of their organizations, sure, and multinational organizations. To get people into...
Sure. I mean, this has all happened after the sort of the original sin, right? I mean, these people just didn't get to this point overnight. But the way I see it is, if it were outright capitalism, it would be fair in the sense that the best idea should win. So the best solutions for, you know, an internal combustion engine should find their ways onto the production line. The best solutions for any given problem should win. But then what we see here is cabals of corrupt individuals who form into certain groups, have certain secret societies backing them, exploiting, pushing out, or killing off competition. You know, that's what we see. And this isn't capitalism. This is a form of fascism. This is a form of cronyism, really.
Yeah, I've never played The Sims, but I heard that there was a game went online of playing The Sims, and what happened is that some people, The Sims game, video game, where you kind of simulate living as a human being, and what happened is that very quickly in this virtual model, some people got very wealthy, very fast, and they accumulated all the resources, all the all the assets, and then the rest of the people, they basically got reduced to, you know, to paupers or beggars. They had nothing. I think that capitalism, by that nature, is like that. But if we do put restrictions on the accumulation of wealth, so people can't accumulate basically the whole monopoly board, if we have those kind of restrictions, then it can work.
It's an interesting debate, but see, this is exactly it. This very debate we're having on air here, folks, is exactly what society needs to have, exactly what people need to be doing from age 18 or before. I mean, it's just understanding these things and nutting them out, because if we don't try and work them out, these other guys are just going to have their way. On that particular point, I don't agree with who's going to legislate the upper limits. You see what I mean? And then you have corruption within that power institution who's able to impose their will on the most wealthy people in society. How powerful they've then got to be. This is the problem. This is the problem with it becomes an arms race. And what I feel is that if someone can accumulate more money on the monopoly board than someone else, good on them. What I don't like, though, is the actual cheating. It's not that it's just playing a game and someone's going to get it more. In a capitalist system, you're going to have a middle class. You're going to have people with speedboats and V8 Commodores, you know. You're going to have a middle class. And some of those people, see, this is my faith. I have faith that people are generally good. And some of these wealthier people are going to help the poor, regardless of legislation, telling them to. Some of these wealthy people are going to start campaigns. You know, if you've got a problem here with, I don't know, some sort of animals being killed off, some wealthy people are going to put money into those funds to, you know, just individuals funding aspects of society that they feel need it. Someone wants to give $10,000 to help Vinny's show because he likes it. He can do that. And wealthy people have to spend their money too, and that drives, you know, that drives industry, and that feeds the middle class. And then you're always going to have some losers. All I'm saying is this fractional reserve cheating system has more losers and less winners. And that's
the reality. Yep. There's more losers than there are winners. It's not a zero-sum game. It's a -1 game. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. We'll be right back, folks.
We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tino Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where do you rather stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV, contrabands. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to a planned absurdity. What?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, broadcasting live from the sunny slave capital, Auckland, New Zealand, and the fabulous Fortress Fluoridehead Paradise. Welcome back. And also welcome back to our very special guest, Jade Tuckwell from 9/11 Truth in Wellington. Jade, welcome back to the program.
Jade. Yeah, just finishing where we are, just carrying on where we left off during the ads, we were talking the Zeitgeist movement and, of course, communism. Because they're kind of interrelated there. I've said it before, the biggest disagreement I have with Zeitgeist, apart from all the occult references, is the fact that Peter Joseph believes we come into the world as a blank slate, that we have no innate desires or drives, and that everything is a result of conditioning. So he's even more of a conspiracy theorist than I am, because I think we're conditioned, but he's like 100% conditioning. But at the same time, he denies the New World Order exists. And so he thinks less of a power establishment exists than I do, but more conditioning occurs than I would say. Funny how that can make sense. Maybe only a Zeitgeist follower can understand that. Jade, what do you think?
Yeah.
What do you think, Jade? Come on.
Hey there, Jade.
Yeah, after watching his, after watching the very last, yes, I am here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, just.
Okay. Just after watching his last film and also listening to the Alex Jones interview of him, I just feel that he's less of, I feel he's less of a threat than I, initially thought he was backed. He is backed by bankers, and it may still be that way, but I just think that the amount of exposure he's done of some real issues, I believe. And although his theories and his direction seem quite wrong and not very helpful, I see that he's an intellectual. He's a very intellectual person, and and I saw a number of parallels between him and Karl Marx. One of the things about Karl Marx is that he never established himself while he was alive, and it was only his theories were resurrected by capitalists who then used his theories to promote this new tyrannical system of communism or Marxism or whatever, which Marxism doesn't work.
Because they were funded by the same bankers. Yep.
Yeah, but basically they were resurrected his ideas. So possibly the same thing may happen with Peter Joseph. But I just feel that Peter Joseph, he's... I don't agree with the direction he's going, but at least he's stirring people's minds, and he's a really good director, and the movie's made a really good. I disagree with.
He's a good movie maker. I mean, he can make some creepy intros. That's for sure.
Promoting the idea of any moral issues. Yeah,
but morals don't exist to him. It's all conditioning. Yeah. This is the funny. Yeah, yeah. The funny thing. Yeah, I mean, he doesn't have any morals, why are you doing it then, Peter? Yeah. I'd like to ask him why he's even doing this. If he wants to help society, where does that idea come from? Is that part of his conditioning? I mean, it's just all a big. It's all a bit of a misnomer for me. It's kind of like saying humanity doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Well, I say my life doesn't have an effect on me, kind of thing. It's just.
It's really, like you say, he's intellectual, and I think that's what I don't like about him.
Will doesn't like intellectuals, ladies and gentlemen.
What I don't like is guys who sit back and pontificate about everything. I don't know.
They don't get their hands dirty, you mean?
They treat us like lab rats here, and Peter Joseph would just be like right now listening, just going, that little, I don't know. But the way you listen to the interview, with him, he's like the Cambridgeite versus the angry Texan, and he's real smart, and he's – I find him patronizing, but personalities aside, because I don't like people focusing on personalities, I think his message is just – I think it's nuanced for all the yuppies, which is good because at least it gets some of the yuppies thinking.
Yeah.
And so I like them existing. I don't think they're dangerous because I don't think they have that much merit, to be honest, but I like the fact that they at least get people thinking and debating these things. And it should exist in a free market. These ideas, should all be out there.
Absolutely. And it's cool that there's at least more material going out. I mean, I recommend that people watch Zeitgeist, even if they don't agree with it, and watch movies like Kymatica, Esoteric Agenda, Endgame. There's a whole myriad of different films out there, Loose Changes.
What's Money Masters?
Money Masters is fabulous. What in the world are they spraying? Also another good one. It's the thing, right? You can inform yourself exponentially quickly with documentaries. That's what really woke me up, because I watched like hundreds of documentaries in a very short period of time. And it was just like every day, a new documentary.
And think about also running a society by empiricism alone, by empirical scientific facts alone. Think about it. We have a little thing called love in this world, a little thing called compassion. that can't be broken down yet scientifically. So what happens if you then run a society by the efficiencies of science alone? What do you think happens?
We don't know. Because it's a really crazy, confused world out there, and maybe we don't have... Maybe we don't have the information to make all the decisions that we need to, and I'm pretty sure that the heart and the brain need to be included in the decision-making process. Thanks very much, Jade Tuckwell, for coming on the show with us today, and you have yourself a wonderful rest of your Saturday, mate.
Thank you, Jade.
Yep, it's been a pleasure.
Cheers, mate.
Yep, thank you.
Here he goes. Jade Tuckwell, ladies and gentlemen, from NZ911Truth.org. We'll be back next hour. Ladies and gentlemen, don't you go changing. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and Rush 89 FM in Hamiltron, as they call it, the city of the future, the city of Agenda 21. We have a very special guest for you today, ladies and gentlemen, in our Kiwi collaborator segment. His name is Dr. Green, changed by deed poll, of course. And he is the, well, what would you say you are, Doctor? The purveyor, the founder of the Dactory, which is New Zealand's first cannabis club. And it is, in fact, still open. The Kiwi-esque for cannabis is DAC. And Dr. Green's sort up this old factory that's full of DAC. So it's called the Dactory. Dr. Green, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinnie Man.
Oh, yeah. Now, we go way back, you know, back when I first became sort of involved in activism. Dr. Green was one of the first people that I devoted an awful lot of time to making a lot of videos for. If you go to YouTube and search Dactory, you'll see an awful lot of stuff that I've done there. And just recently you've come on tour, but I wanted to just talk about you and sort of introduce yourself to the listeners, Doctor. How is it you got into this field?
Benny, that's like, how much time have you got? First of all,
we've got about 2 minutes.
I'm 60 years old, and for the first 40 years of my life, I was a prohibitionist when it came to cannabis, and then I tried cannabis for the first time. My adult son offered me a smoke one night. The circumstances were such that I felt that it was appropriate for me to try this substance to find out what it was that was so attractive to young people. I knew my son had had a problem with cannabis for a couple of years. And I woke up the next morning and I was no longer a prohibitionist. It changed my mind and changed my life completely. Over the last 20 years, I've transformed from a middle-class straight person who looked down on a lot of people, and I have now become a part of the cannabis culture. And I feel some responsibility for my ignorance for my first 40 years of life. So I have completely changed my view with regard to cannabis and the legality thereof, and I have made it my mission in life to play a role in the process of law change that's desperately required around the world. And my contribution to that, growing, getting busted, and spending time in jail, which with where I sat and planned.
Oh, yes. Coming at us live from the Dactory in Auckland, ladies and gentlemen, is Dr. Green on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back after these short few messages from our sponsors. Vinnie Eastwood Show. You're listening to the Dactory theme song. Our very special guest, live from the Dactory in New Lynn in Auckland, it's Dr. Green. Welcome back, Doctor.
Thank you, Vinnie Man. I call you Vinnie Man because, after all, that is your Dactor name. We know this man as Dr. Vinnie Man at the Dactory. He is our special videographer when we first opened here 2 years ago, and there's lots of your very fine movies still up on the internet, Vinnie Man. We're very grateful for that.
Well,
I think... Some big views of your videos.
Some big views, yeah. There's thousands and thousands of people have seen the Dactory videos, which I think for me is evidence of just how popular the idea of the Dactory really is. And I remember when it opened over that first summer, what did we get? We like 2,000 members over the first summer?
We started on November the 19th, 2008, with 20 people signing up on the first day. And 2.5 months later, we were forced to close the doors because we had over 1,500 members and we lost control of the place. We didn't have the right management controls in place. So we closed it for a few weeks and reopened and put proper management systems in place and reopened at lower key, but today it's thriving, bigger, stronger than it was in that first summer. So everything's humming along very nicely now. It's looking good. And 2.5 years. Now, people around the world won't realize that New Zealand cannabis prohibition laws are some of the strictest in the world. America and New Zealand are the two leading lights in the number of people that we lock in jail for cannabis. So we are equally at risk in this country as anybody in the United States. But we don't even allow medical in our country. Possession of one cannabis seed is an arrestable offence. So what we did here in New Lynn 2.5 years ago is a little bit different. We opened a club. It's a big warehouse, some hundreds of square meters. We filled it full of couches and an overhead projector with a good sound system, dartboard, pool table, ping pong table. And it's a place where we park our campaign bus, Mary Jane the Cannabus, that I've driven around and around the country over the last 3 years. So it's a home for Mary Jane the Cannabus, and we open 5 days a week. We treat it as though they are licensed premises for cannabis, and we attempt to regulate an illegal market. We control the age of people that come in. We are an R18 organization. We attempt to act as though cannabis is a legally available product. We live like it's legal is our slogan at the Daiquiri. And we're now getting hundreds and hundreds of people through every night. And I'm not talking about the same people day after day. There are thousands of different people every week coming through this place now. And it's wonderful. It's growing in strength, which will be very nice when in May this year I'm due to go to trial on charges relating to this place. I was arrested just over a year ago. So it's going to be an interesting trial. I'm charged with cultivating cannabis, selling cannabis, permitting the premises to be used for the consumption of illegal substances, namely cannabis. We do restrict consumption in this place to cannabis alone. We don't permit any alcohol and we don't permit any other drugs. We're very strict on that. And we are an R18 organization. It is a place where people in the cannabis culture can come together and hang out, chill together, and meet other people that have similar interests, namely cannabis. And, of course, we have a huge range of different backgrounds that come to this place, old, young, men, women, all different types of occupations. It's a wonderful experience to see this cross-section of our society socializing together in a building without... Look, the only loud voices that we hear in this place are ones of laughter. It is quite amazing. So I'm delighted that I've been instrumental in getting this started, but it is quite unique around the world. We were open and trading when the first cannabis club was opened in America, and that was restricted to medical licensed patients and members of Normal in the city that they opened. And we thought that was quite amusing because there's nothing really illegal about that. What we do is, of course, highly illegal, but we refuse to be browbeaten. We refuse to be beaten by our authorities. Because cannabis should be a legally available and regulated product to adults anywhere in the world. So this is our way of showing that we will not succumb to this bullshit any longer. I hope that word...
Well, it's FCC regulations, that actually is. You have to say BS.
Oh, yes, I'm very sorry. I will censor myself. Beep!
Oh, for Eep's sake. All right. but it's all good. I mean, and it is very appropriate to call it BS because that's precisely what the cannabis laws really are. I mean, we've got – how many people have we got in jail now, Dexter? About 700 people in jail for cannabis charges alone?
It's approaching 1,000. It's a bit difficult to get exact numbers because they're coming and going all the time, of course. But as a percentage of our prison population, it generally runs at about 10 to 12% of our prison population at any given time are there for cannabis-only offences. There are also those, of course, that are in jail for cannabis offences and other things. Sometimes there are bad people that actually have guns in their house when they've been busted for a grow-op or something of that nature. In one case, just recently, and this man hasn't gone to jail at this point, but he is being prosecuted, the police came in, grabbed him for his grow operation, and they found guns in his house. And this man was a licensed pest shooter. He used to kill possums and other pesky things farmers would call about a wild dog, and he would go out there and dispatch that wild dog, and those are the things that he did. That was his occupation. But they closed down his grow room, which was for personal use, and they took his guns, which was his job, gone. So it is a pretty evil situation. And let's be honest, where did this thing start? Cannabis prohibition commenced in the United States, so we look to the United States to fix this problem but we're not going to wait for you to do that. We're getting on and doing it ourselves as well. But I have to say, in a little country like New Zealand, we've had some officials in our health department that have said there will be no change to cannabis laws until one of the big countries go ahead with it. So come on, America, pull finger and change those laws.
Well, you know, it seems pretty logical that those who start it should end it, you know. But cannabis laws aren't known for their logic, are they, Dacto? I mean, what have we got now? We've got cannabis being used as a cure for cancer in some cases. And what else? How would the cancer industry survive with legal cannabis? It's one of the most profitable industries known to man. They make huge amounts of money, and they don't cure jack. They help people cope and live a little longer, but they don't cure it or anything. Least of all, cure it with a weed that somebody can get, that any person with two marbles rolling around in their skull can grow in their backyard for free.
I think it is being a little loose with the truth to say that cannabis cures cancer. There are some promising results from some trials, and there is anecdotal evidence that cannabis assists and that it may kill some cancerous cells. But to say blithely that it cures cancer is an exaggeration. I have not seen any medical studies or test results that show that it will cure cancer. That is too wide a statement to make.
Well, there's a documentary called Run from the Cure, made by a man named Rick Simpson in Canada. Have you heard of this?
I have seen it, Vinny, but it's still too soon to say that it cures cancer. That sounds like, you know, take this medicine if you have a cancer and it will cure it, and that's not the case. There are some cancerous cells that may be inhibited or even killed by the use of cannabinoids. But that's not all cancer cells, so it is.
And they certainly do go through a lot of processing before they get to those stages where they are medically applicable. Anyway, I mean,
Raw cannabis.
Raw cannabis.
Sure, they don't process cannabis to provide it as a medicine.
Well, that's what Rick Simpson did. He processed it down into high THC hemp oil, and it seemed to work.
Yeah, into oil. That's right. There's nothing secret about that. Every grower knows how to make oil. You don't go throwing all your leftover bits and pieces. We smoke them. We smoke the head. We smoke the bud. You know, the core of the flower, but all the rest of it is processed. And of course, you can process the head into oil as well. That's but it's a simple process. It's not like you're putting it in a laboratory and mixing 10 different chemicals together to come up with a cure-all. That's not the way it works.
From what I've read, it's kind of like broccoli or something. I mean, there are some antioxidant, anti-carcinogenic effects from cannabinoids. If you burn and smoke anything, it's going to increase the chance of getting cancer. I mean, it's burning something and inhaling it.
Sorry about that. I didn't realize that the phone was still on.
Well, that was the interesting thing about it as well. It's being prohibited, yet it has so many different uses as a medical substance in the first place. You know, I mean, regardless of what people may believe about how strong cannabis is or what the possible dangers are, there are many, many studies that have come out to say that it can be used as a medical substance in dozens and dozens of different conditions, if not hundreds even.
Now, sure. Sorry, I'm with him.
My phone call there, guys. I'm with you now in full control.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely dactastic.
I'll have to spark up a J, a joint, a decorette, whatever you like to call it. I am now going to smoke some cannabis.
All right, go for your life, Dector.
Carry on. Let's keep this conversation going.
Always a fun time here at the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Now, we were talking about civil disobedience. Civil disobedience, right? This is one of the ways that is being protested out at the moment. And more recently, a couple of members of the DACTA, including DACTA Wurzel and DACTA Siffin, have been organising these protests, two of them which I've attended, on the corner of busy intersections. They just basically hang out there for an hour, wave signs around, and smoking in public is what the protest is generally about. And I think that it may be having a pretty good effect. The public response seems to be very, very, well, hyped even, you know, lots of people tooting their horns and support things like this. And it just shows just how pervasive, maybe pervasive is not the right word, but just how out there cannabis use is in the general community. There's so many cannabis users who agree with it being legal, but yet those don't translate into votes for legalization?
Because people don't vote on this issue. Yes, some people vote on the issue of cannabis alone, all right? There is a political party in New Zealand, the Aotearoa Legalized Cannabis Party, and it does receive, you know, good numbers of votes, but not enough to become the to elect a member of parliament at this point. And that's not likely to happen because adults who cast votes do not cast a vote for an individual or for a party based on one single policy alone. It's about, you know, who has the greater number of good policies that I support. So even the one political party that is in parliament that supports cannabis law reform, that is the New Zealand or the Aotearoa Green Party, cannabis law reform is only one of their platforms. So it's very hard getting political traction. There is no doubt in my mind, having travelled around our whole country here over the last 3 years on many, many occasions and speaking with thousands of people, and in fact, from time to time, smoking openly in public because that's just what we do. It's part of our culture to share a joint. There is no doubt in my mind that there is widespread support for legalising cannabis, certainly for medical use. That is the primary, that's well in the majority. But we have politicians who play politics. And as long as one political party says to another that might be considering going down the legal cannabis route, oh, you're going soft on crime, nobody's going to take that step. So of liberalizing the cannabis laws. Because it's all about law and order, and
yeah, I mean, they don't see the connection, do they, Doctor, between crime and criminalization? If you say that everybody's a criminal, well, obviously you're going to have a lot of crime because you've just changed what a crime is.
Sure. Oh, now one of the interesting, I read something just recently. One of our very smart people, and I say that ironically, said that one of the benefits, oh, it was a police officer, when they were talking about we're not going to prosecute people for minor crimes any longer. We're going to give them a stern warning and we'll let you off. Like smoking a joint in public would fit the criteria for a stern warning. As long as you are remorseful about breaking the law, then the police can give you a formal warning. And the police said at that time that this policy will result in less people being processed through the criminal system. It will lower the crime rate. And I thought, excuse me, was that Homer Simpson? Constable? Duh. Of course you lower the crime rate if you stop something being a crime. I mean, that's just stupidity in the extreme. And unfortunately,
welcome to the New Zealand police. Welcome to the New Zealand police force, ladies and gentlemen. A bunch of bright sparks, one and all. I actually mean that
blow
quite seriously.
Blow on the pie, Vinny. Blow on the pie.
Yeah. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Our very special guest from the DACTA is DACTA Green. Be right back. ladies and gentlemen, can't run and you can't hide from reality. Oh, wait, actually, you can. And they call it cannabis prohibition. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly broadcasting on Rush 89 FM in Hamilton. And our very special guest, ladies and gentlemen, is joining us from thedactory.org.nz. It's Dr. Green, the founder of The Dactory in Auckland. Welcome back, Doctor.
Thank you, Vinnie man. Nice to be here.
Oh, it's always nice to have a fabulous, illustrious guest such as yourself on the show. Now, I wanted to talk about your past a little bit, because you've actually been involved with law change before, haven't you?
Yes, I have. And, you know, I don't know what this is about, Vinnie, but all my life I've always seen things that just don't make sense in life. I mean, in the 1970s, I couldn't understand why we wouldn't allow our shops to open on the weekend. To me, it was very simple. If a person owns a shop and wants to open the door, who has the right to decide whether or not they're allowed to do that? The government should certainly not be the one to decide when a person is allowed to work. So I was involved in that campaign during the 70s. It took 5 years, but we succeeded. And today, of course, people... If you're under 30 years old in New Zealand, you don't remember shops being closed on the weekend. And then in the 1980s, I decided that I would start a casino in this country. So it wasn't legal to do it. Nobody was offering any casino licenses. So I bought a ship. We put a casino on the ship. We sailed outside our 12-mile limit into international waters. And we gambled through the night and came back in the morning. At the same time, there were actually a few of those similar sort of activities going on around the coast in America and the southern states down in the Gulf of Mexico. There were casino gambling ships that were operating at that time. I never saw any of them, but, you know, it was just the way it was at that stage. Authorities were running behind what people wanted. So I started the casino and... we were closed down, but a couple of years later, the government issued the first casino license for a casino to be built on shore. So, yeah, there are times when I can just look into the future and I can say, I can't think of a reason why something is like it is now, and therefore other sensible people will ultimately realize that and it will change. And it was about 12 years ago I decided that cannabis was going to be legal in the near future and that I wanted to be part of that change and that new industry. I was living in Australia at the time. And, of course, I've actually spent a great amount of time under the control of the state in the last 11 and a half years since I got involved in the business, because I'm not a very good criminal. But I am very good at explaining to...
Did you get caught, Doctor? Because I remember you telling me you went to, what was it, minimum security prison in California?
No, it was a maximum security county jail. I spent a year in incarcerated in California. Yeah, for growing a few plants, and of course... It was at the early time when medical cannabis was happening, but that wasn't a defense for me because I hadn't set it up in that way. But, you know, I was there to learn how to grow medical-grade cannabis. I got caught up in an illegal activity that was going on by law enforcement, and I was one of those victims. Yes, I had been growing cannabis, but... the law was broken by law enforcement as well. And I spent, you know, a year incarcerated. It was my first time locked up. The fact that it was for growing flowers that now is widely recognized around the world and particularly in California as a medicine, it is, after all, legally available there, You know, it just makes a mockery of the whole law. And why do we continue to punish people in some parts of the world, and in other parts of the world they're revered? You know, back in the times of prohibition of alcohol, if you were a connoisseur of fine wine, or if you were a judge of fine wine, you would be pilloried by the general public, but admired by a few select people that knew what you were talking about. I think the same applies today when it comes to cannabis. There are many fine strains of cannabis out there that people enjoy smoking for its taste, its effect. It truly is, for many people, the finest recreation drug in the world. And there are people that are pilloried and treated as second-class citizens because of their choice of cannabis as their intoxicant of choice. So I'm of the view that in the near future, and it will be in your lifetime, Vinny, I'm not sure about mine, I am getting on a bit, who knows, but in your lifetime, it will occur around the world that cannabis will be accepted as part of the community, as a recreational drug, as well as being shown to be a very fine medicine for so many different ailments. Whether it's a cure or whether it's a remedial pain relief or something of that nature, cannabis will come back into its proper place. It was, after all, a medicine for thousands of years, and it's only the nonsense that has occurred in the last 70 years that decides that I'm a criminal and some smart ass in the White House, President Sniff Coke up my nose, thinks I should be locked in jail. sorry, Bush, that's not going to happen, boy. You go back to your coke and I'll stick with my weed. But all right, I know there's a new president now, and we're a little disappointed with Obama because, you know, we really thought that he would actually kick some butt over there and change these cannabis laws. But he's not doing stop the medical, so that's something, I guess.
You know, little by little, but, you know, the general agenda of not listening to the people and just doing a whole bunch of silly things all the time and extending wars and killing people continues. So it doesn't really matter who seems to be in charge. I think it's the people on the ground, the grassroots activists, that really make the changes election to election, not the politicians.
There's no doubt that the effort that we are involved in changing the law in this country, there's no doubt in my mind that we are having an effect. There are more and more people that are willing to come out and show their support. And that's a very difficult thing because they all faced this public ridicule. But there'll come a time when there will be sufficient that have come out. The critical mass will reach that point where we will tip over, and all of a sudden those that oppose us will be in the minority and they'll shut up. I nearly said that word I'm not allowed to say live on air, but I stopped that word, Vinny, because we know it will stop. Because the people are angry. We're not going to put up with this nonsense any longer. Until the day that I smoked a joint, I was just one of those normal law-abiding citizens that gets on with life and, you know, pays his taxes and does those normal things within that wide range of whatever is normal within the average life. But the moment I became part of the cannabis culture, I became a second-class citizen because law proclaims it. Law says that I'm a criminal. Now, just think about the gay reform movement of the 80s. Up until the 1980s, when law reform was being debated all around the world for gays, up till that time, the law says we will arrest you if you conduct, you know, act in those gay ways. And so it was pretty much you know, the poofter bashing was what it was called when I was young. That was pretty much okay. Even police indulged in that from time to time because these were second-class citizens. But nobody today anywhere in the world would, no reasonable person would look at a gay person today and make any disparaging comment that had anything to do with their sexual preference because it's not an illegal activity, and everybody, straight and gay, should applaud that because we're all individuals and we're entitled to our own privacy and our own private life. Today, in New Zealand, when prostitution was legalized a few years ago in this country, I can sit in my bedroom with a man. I can charge that man or pay that man for sexual favors. We can do all sorts of things that in the past have been a criminal activity. But if at the end of all of that we choose to spark up a joint to share, we're criminals and we're going to jail. I think that's an obscenity, and I think that politicians all over the world should be required to stand up and justify such an evil that they continue to perpetrate in our society.
And, of course, they cannot justify it, can they? Because it's a lie built upon a lie built upon a lie. I mean, and more to the point, the amount of other products that cannabis, and you know, medical aside, just the industrial products from hemp alone, something like 50,000 different products from soaps and paint and car paneling, you know?
Yeah, look, but Vinny, I agree with you about the huge number of uses and all of that. But bottom line, there is only one thing that really matters in this argument. I want the politicians that who say they represent the people, I want them to stand up and tell me and tell the people, why do you think I should be sent to jail for being part of the cannabis culture? And if you answer, because I broke the law, then you don't deserve to be there, all right? I know I break the law. I do it every day. I've done it live on your show a few minutes ago. But why do we have that law? Why do we have this power to arrest for cannabis? It better have something to do with cannabis. Otherwise, it's a prejudice. And the short answer is there is nothing wrong with cannabis that would require draconian measures of prohibition. So why don't we change it?
There are people talking about that there was some description of conspiracy against cannabis by certain industries that who bribe politicians in order to get the law passed. I mean, I'm not 100% sure on the details of that one, but it still makes a lot more sense than just, oh, we'll just make it illegal, because lies had to be told to the American people in order to get that law passed in the first place. And then it took off round and it became UN law. And I remember we had a meeting, Dector, with who was that guy from the Law Commission, saying that New Zealand will never violate UN law and we won't change the law.
No, that's taking it a little bit far. There are international agreements that you know countries are party to, but there are always outs. There are out clauses, and for that reason, Portugal, a signatory to the same UN conventions, Portugal was able to legalize all drugs about 6 years ago, or I might be out slightly with the timing, but Portugal is a classic example where by legalizing all drugs, their drug use has declined across all drugs. It's actually been an experiment that has worked extremely well and is not being supported by politicians in the big countries.
Oh, well, it's such a shame. Supposedly we've got freedom of speech and freedom of action in this country. I don't reckon so. We'll be right back. Thank you. Alright, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Phil on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. A very special guest, Dr. Green, joins us live from Dactory in New Lynn. You can go to see the website, thedactory.org. That's D-A-K-T-O-R-Y. Like Dak, D-A-K, factory, O-R-Y. Okay. And, Dr., I just wanted to leave this on a positive note. So would you mind divulging just some of the horrendous suffering that people in society go through and society itself as a result of not of the cannabis but of the actual prohibition laws?
Well, all the dangers that people talk about that they associate with cannabis, in fact, are not associated with cannabis the plant but with cannabis prohibition. And there have been people that have died in this evil drugs war as a direct result of prohibition. How often do we hear of police officers in any country around the world bursting into homes with guns drawn or perhaps being shot by somebody attempting to defend their crop? It's the prohibition laws that cause these problems, not the cannabis itself. A regulated market that exists for wine, we don't see the police rushing into orchards or vineyards or into wineries and holding them at gunpoint or shooting their pets because it's a legal and a regulated market. So we know what happens with prohibition. That is not the way to control things in society. It simply creates a whole bunch of criminals as a result of that prohibition. Now, this has been a long time coming because 70 years ago or thereabouts, when worldwide cannabis was made an illegal substance warranting arrest and imprisonment, very few people used cannabis for any reason. It was used as medicines, patent medicines, but they were not. It was not a recreational drug in that sense. So now that it is, and now that vast numbers of the world population are indulging in cannabis and understand the truth about cannabis, it is a very unfortunate thing that we have governments that are rejecting that call for legalization, and that means people get sent to jail, families are torn apart through this plant, this flower being classed as a criminal flower. So I can give you, look, I can't think of anybody at all that's had anything much to do with cannabis within my circle of friends that hasn't had some run-in with law enforcement. And so we're all victims of prohibition, including those that have nothing to do with cannabis. I can imagine a grandma somewhere in Auckland today is having her house burgled. She would know absolutely nothing about cannabis, and it won't even be a cannabis smoker that's robbing her. But where's the policeman to catch this robber, this burglar? He's out busily busting someone for smoking a joint in public. And I exaggerate for effect, but that is the evilness of our prohibition laws. So you wanted to end the show on a good note and a fun note, and then you asked me about the pain and suffering, and I hope I've outlined what the pain and suffering is, Vinny Man. The pain and suffering comes from the prohibition of cannabis. But to truly end on a high note, and I intend the pun, let's talk about the Dactory and more of them, and more places like this being established, firstly throughout New Zealand and then in other parts of the world. It is, in my view, a growing movement where the people are planning to take back control of their lives by taking back control of cannabis from the bad people, where communities can come together and say, we know cannabis exists in our community. With some regulations and rules, we can control this within our community, and any profits generated can go back to the community. That's the principle that supports the daiquiri. And I think on a good note is the positive feedback that we're getting from so many different people. We are as busy at the daiquiri as we've ever been, and more people are becoming converts to our cause. And that has to be a very positive note to end your show on, Vinny. The daiquiris are here to stay, and I have no doubt that we are a minor amount of time away from full legalization worldwide. And that has to be very good for a vast number of our population who are directly affected by the threat of imprisonment and by those that are not part of the cannabis culture. You'll have a policeman who'll be able to come and catch that robber. So that's good news, I think.
Well, I think it is. I mean, with all the criminality that's going on in government, maybe we should divert some of the police attention. You know what I'm saying?
But let's not talk about conspiracies now, Vinny. We're talking about cannabis.
Well, I would say cannabis is illegal because of a conspiracy. Two or more people came together to cause harm on another group of people without them knowing about it. Seems pretty straightforward to me. That's the textbook definition of conspiracy. But doesn't mean that it's unreal or crazy to talk about it. Cannabis is not legal for a good reason, so somebody must have lied, and that's pretty logical. Thank you very much, Dr. Green, for coming on the show with us today, and we very much hope you enjoy your fabulous afternoon at your home at the Daiquiri. His website, ladies and gentlemen, is thedaiquiri.org.nz. You can check out some of the hardest cannabis activists out here in New Zealand. Thanks very much, Dector.
You're welcome. And you could just Google the Daiquiri and it'll pop up there right as number one, including our map and phone number and all the other details, because we don't hide anything here. We're
all
out
right.
There like it's legal.
Bye. Thanks very much. Bye, folks.